Good afternoon. It's April 14th, 2023, and we're in the Princeton Public Library to hear an oral history for the Voices of Princeton as part of a partner project with the Jewish Community Foundation of Greater Mercer. My name is Kim Dorman. I'm serving as facilitator, and I'm with Mara Olmsted, who is interviewing Hazel Stix.
I'm Mara Olmsted. I'm the interviewer.
And I'm Hazel Stix, the interviewee.
All right. So, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to Princeton?
Well, I grew up in New York, New York City, and I met my husband in St. Louis, but he was then at Caltech, but he had applied to Princeton University for graduate studies in physics, and I, just by coincidence, had decided to leave Washington University and move back to New York, where my mother was living, and finish my schooling at NYU. So we met briefly in St. Louis, and then there were no women in Princeton at that time. That may have influenced this. But anyway, we dated for a long time in New York, and then I finished college, and he was in Princeton, so we got married, and I moved out to Princeton. And we lived in what was then called Veterans Housing. This was 1950. It was called Veterans Housing. It was also called Temporary Housing, and it was also called Graduate Student Housing, and this was on Harrison Street. The temporary housing was finally demolished after 70 years, so that gives a new meaning to the word temporary. But we lived there for 4 years, and it was a great place to live, actually.
There were a lot of young people there.
There were mainly graduate students, many of whom, some of them stayed on in Princeton and became professors at Princeton, and others went on to other places. But we were all pretty much the same age, and there's new graduate student housing now, which is really like an apartment building. But to tell the truth, although these were basically like barracks. I mean, you know, they were three apartments to a unit, and they were one floor, and they didn't have, of course, any air conditioning or anything like that. Well, they were very minimal. And if you were lucky, if you had an end unit, because if you had a middle unit, you could hear things from both sides. Mm-hmm. This way you only heard something from one side. And we were also we were on Butler Avenue, and we were an end unit, 411C Butler. So we not only were an end unit, but we also had fields behind us that the university would mow. Those fields are now Makosh Circle and McLean Circle and all the faculty houses that are there. It was actually very nice because we all got together. It happened that there were a few other young Jewish women there, and we, since they had children, I didn't have any children, and I wasn't working, so we formed a chapter of Hadassah, and so we would get together and do all kinds of things, and it was a very good kind of activity for us. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, we would write things down, and we were all very interested in what was going on in the world, and we would meet. Some of them had little children. I eventually had a child there, and I was president of Hadassah when my daughter was, you know, just an infant, and she would just come with me to the meetings, and she would play in the middle of the room while we had our meetings. It was actually a great time.
No. So you guys were social outside of that? The families would get together?
Yeah, and it kept you active, you know, mentally as well, because you were doing something. I volunteered. Someone just mentioned that I was a Girl Scout leader for some, which is really funny because I had never been a Girl Scout, but it was one of the things to do. I remember trying to make a fire. It was really hardly... I wasn't the world's greatest Girl Scout leader, but it was another activity, and then there was a League of Women Voters and, you know, things like that that kept us just busy and active. And the fact that you could just walk outside and walk around is really, in a way, so much nicer than the big apartment building. What they have done is, in the apartment buildings now, is that they make a big recreation room, but it's different. It was a different kind of a, so that was my early time in, excuse me, in Princeton.
4 years in the barracks. Yeah. And from there, where did you go?
Well, we lived there for 4 years, and then we bought a house on Deer Path. Deer Path was the only place in Princeton where they actually, the builders had built all the same style house. I mean, you may think that when you drive around Princeton that there are a lot of all the same style houses. There are a lot of split levels and so on. But this was designed as they were all the same. Some of them had a peaked roof and other ones had a roof that was like a V shape. Some of them had fireplaces, but the floor plan was all the same. And they were on very small lots. But again, it had some of the similarities to the project. Whenever I say project, one of my friends always says that always makes me think of big brick buildings in New York.
Right.
But anyway, but it had the similarity that they were first-time buyers, and they were small houses, no attic and no basement. And so most of the people were young people, and very often, you know, university people with small children. So it was the same, and essentially the same kind of living.
I had heard at one point there was that Jews in Princeton were kind of pushed to one area, one section of the town, maybe Little Brook. Does that sound familiar to you?
I think that was rather true. I mean, we didn't run into that at that time because we weren't looking any. But if you went over to the west side of which town, well, now the west side is also, you know, there are a lot of houses, but the west end in that time were the real old houses, the Cleveland Lane, Westcott Road, all of that. And somehow the Jews didn't get there eventually. But I remember at the end of Cleveland Lane, just when you got to Elm Road, there was a modern house, and I remember that being the first Jewish family lived there. And then later, another one lived over on Wynant Road. But I don't know that you couldn't buy, but it wasn't. It was a certain amount of snobbishness involved.
Yeah.
and for that matter, if you were a newcomer to Princeton, you could be not really a newcomer. You could have been there for 25 years. You were really not considered the Princetonian. It was the old-timers.
Hadn't come over on the Mayflower. And
right.
Right. Okay. The cohort then that moved into these houses, again, a lot of university folks?
I think almost mainly. A lot of them. But there were others too, because it was, you know, it wasn't university housing.
Were those group the grad students? I don't know if he had started to have a professorship at that point. Were they active with Jewish groups on campus? Was there a Hillel at that point that you did things with?
There was a Hillel. Well, I was here in 1950. There were very, very few Jews. There were very few Jews on the faculty. In fact, I remember one professor telling someone who was also a professor but had just come to play down his Jewishness. He didn't, actually, but there were very few Jews on the faculty at that time. But I wouldn't. It's interesting because somebody did find a letter. A student found a letter recently, I mean, the last few years, from a Jewish student at Princeton in what was then 100 years before. This was a few years ago that he found this, and mentioned it to the alumni group, and then Eisgruber, who is the president of Princeton, said we should celebrate this, and 100 years of Jews in Princeton. And he turned over the campus for a weekend. It was absolutely fabulous. There were, I think, 800 Jewish, either alumni or faculty who were there. And it was wonderful. There were talks, there were lectures. But it really wasn't 100 years of Jewish participation. It was one student 100 years ago, and then probably none for the next 50, because when we came, there were not that many Jewish students and or Jewish faculty.
Did you guys experience discrimination or, you know, personally anti-Semitism, or it was just kind of in the background but nothing overt?
Yeah, we didn't really find any discrimination.
And then is that, I don't know where it fits in the history, were you involved with the formation of the Jewish Center?
Well, when we came here, as I say, there were very, very few Jews here. But Princeton was much smaller altogether. I've told people that in the summer, when the students went home, not that the students had cars, but you could bicycle down the center of Nassau Street. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, and there were two movie houses. There was the garden, which is still here, and then the playhouse, which is no longer here.
What was that called?
The garden is now, and the playhouse was
playhouse,
the other.
Okay.
The playhouse was, I think, right near Palmer Square, if I'm not mistaken. And no movie houses around. I remember one summer when we sent our children to camp, and we thought, oh, well, now we have a whole vacation. And we went to see a movie. It was called... I've forgotten the name of it right now. It'll come to me. And we went right away, and it was on. It played all summer, and there was no other movie house in the area. I mean, it was a totally. I mean, that all changed, I think, when RCA started and some of the other big companies, because then more, if RCA was the first, then many more Jewish people moved into town. But before that, it was a very, very small Jewish community. I mean, you really knew everybody that was in the Jewish community. And even later, when it became a little more, well, considerably later, like in 1967, which is 17 years after I came, when there was the Six-Day War, which nobody knew was going to be 6 days, it was very frightening. I mean, people thought that Israel was just going to be wiped out. I think the number of Jews in Israel were like 500,000, and they were, you know, fighting, were surrounded by people, like countries that wanted to get rid of them. Everybody who was in the Jewish community went to the Jewish Center, there was a gathering place, and there was this shared concern of, I think, almost every Jewish person in Princeton at the time. That's diluted over the years as Israel becomes more established, even though it's still very vulnerable. But you don't get this, it's a little different. And if there were Israelis living in town, you knew them. I mean, we got very friendly with two Israeli couples. I mean, you just would. I mean, everything was so small. But Princeton was small, too. You know, it's interesting.
The small town feel has definitely changed. You said you sent the kids away for summer camp. They went to Jewish summer camps, or?
No, they actually went to a camp that was very near here. And then later, first they went to a camp that was close here, and then later they went to other camps that, I guess they were Jewish camps, but they were Jewish camps.
And then they went through the...
As a matter of fact, they definitely were, because I remember I just ran across the little letters I kept. Somebody asked, did the children both enjoy camp the same? And one letter was from my son, and it told about every activity he was in. He was excelling in archery and swimming, and at 12 he was invited to join the junior lifesaving, and he just went down the whole thing. And then my daughter wrote and said, you know, come and get me. The food is terrible. And we have to sing Hebrew songs after breakfast.
There you go.
So it was definitely a Jewish game.
Did you send her back anyway?
And I didn't come and get her, I'll tell you that. Then at the end of the letter, she'd say something like, send me some dippity-doo. I don't know if you know about dippity-doo. It's something into between your hair.
Yeah.
So she could be mollified with
dippity-doo.
A care package.
So the kids went through the Princeton Public Schools?
They went through...
Borough?
They went through the public schools up until high school. What happened there was, and they were fine. They went to Littlebrook originally, and then we moved after 10 years in Deer Path. We built a house, and we moved over to Brookstone Drive, and that's Johnson Park School. So that's where they went. And then they went to the middle school. And then when Susie would have been entering high school and Michael was in eighth grade, we went to Israel on sabbatical, on Tom's sabbatical. By that time, he had passed graduate school and was a professor. So so we went to Israel, and going to high school would have been hopeless. I mean, it would all have been in Hebrew. There was one English-speaking school, but she would have had to travel to get to it every day, and Israel's drivers are notoriously bad. So we decided to send her to a different school. And during that period, and Michael went to eighth grade in Israel.
Okay.
And he managed. You know, he was very good in math. And, as long as it didn't have words in it, he was able to do well. And then little by little, 13 is a really good age for learning things because you learn like a child and you keep it better and you learn a different vocabulary. During the time that we were in Israel, Princeton schools were going through some kind of a trauma. I think, I don't know whether it was the superintendent who had quit and they were but it was going through some sort of change. So when we got back, we decided to send them to PDS. Susie she would now have been in her senior year, essentially. And with Michael, he was just starting. So we decided to send him to PDS, and if things changed in the Princeton school system, we would send him back to the school. But, you know, once you start, I think it would have done just as well in either place. But so that was why we didn't complete. Yeah. And ordinarily, we would have sent them to Princeton High School.
Yeah.
So... We actually spent a couple of years in Israel. We spent their first year, when Susie would have been going into first grade, we spent a year at the Weizmann Institute. And I was concerned about her learning to read from left to right, and then not having yet learned to read from right to left. But children are amazing.
Yeah. When you would go away, did it change your view on Princeton when you came back? Were you always happy to see it again, grateful, or missed Israel?
Yeah. Well, the first year that we were in Israel, Israel was so small that you felt that you made a difference. I mean, Tom is in physics, and he could have stayed at the Weizmann Institute. It was very tempting because you felt that it was just in the beginning. I mean, 1960, it became a state in 48, so it was a very, very early. But we felt at home in Princeton too, and Princeton was where we really belonged. So we had a little bit of both.
Yeah,
so it's fine.
If you were describing Princeton to someone who hadn't been there, how would you characterize it?
Well, I said it was a beautiful place to live, and people were friendly, and children were in good schools, which was really important. And it was a very good place to live. I'm a little concerned about how big Princeton is getting now. I look at the traffic and wonder when we have a hotel and we have 2,400 new units, but I won't discuss that.
Yes. No, you know how it's changed is a subject.
But it did change over the years, and the Jewish community grew enormously. So in the beginning, there wasn't anything special, but then as the community got to be a little bit of a community, more than just the store owners, they bought or rented, I don't remember, a little one-room house on Olden Avenue in town. Is that Olden Street or Olden Avenue? And it was just one room. I mean, as I saw somebody, you know, you could hear the toilet flush in the sanctuary. But it was nice, everybody. And then eventually, as the town, the Jewish community began to grow, we decided it was obvious that we needed something that was more permanent, and that's when fundraising started, and we built the main Jewish center. The Jewish center has increased even since then because they now have the building next to it, which is at where the school is. It has since increased in size so much, but it was small when it began. And of course, there is something nice about the intimacy of something small, but it was also one interesting thing about the Jewish community, even in the beginning, is that we were all very much on the same page religiously. I mean, people came here. It could have been anything. There was nobody who was really very Orthodox.
Right.
On the other hand, none of us had Christmas trees,
right,
which was just interesting. Nobody influenced anybody else. It was just, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So we were all very much in sync.
People, how were they kosher-wise? Did people keep kosher?
Some were kosher. They were, and that's always a project. I mean, they do get the food from New Brunswick or something, but not many. There were just a few.
Just
people who,
okay.
And even they, if they were kosher, but they weren't. Nobody wore a kippah all the time or like that.
Everyone felt culturally Jewish anyway.
Yeah, I think we would probably be considered conservative, although the term conservative has changed over the years too. Conservatives become more religious.
And the kids were bar and bat mitzvah there?
Michael was bar mitzvah, Susie never. And Susie was not an enthusiastic Sunday school attender.
It was the camp that did it.
So, I know she had a very close friend, and the two of them would support each other in there. But Michael was bar mitzvah and really loved it. He worked hard on it, and it was around Sukkot, I think. There's one period when it's a very long service, and he did the whole service. And the bar mitzvah was what really impressed him. And also in those days, well, now this goes back to what things were like, it was a small enough congregation so that I think I made the refreshments for the congregation, and Michael made his own invitation. It was a block print of Hebrew letters, and I wrote the invitation, and then I think we Xeroxed the whole thing.
Nice.
It was so different from the bar mitzvahs today, I can't even imagine. And then we had the bar mitzvah, and then we went to the Princeton Inn before it became a dormitory, and we must have had 50 or more, you know, family.
Is it the Princeton Inn? I don't know if I know.
It's right opposite the Dinky, is what is the Princeton Inn now, but the Princeton Inn is now a dormitory.
Okay.
It was a very nice hotel. Really nice. We wouldn't have needed another hotel, maybe. But, and so we had the family. There was no big party.
Did the whole congregation pretty much
go?
Or it was only the
family? I had prepared something for the congregation. I mean, just sort of snacks. I don't remember what it was. Probably tuna fish.
Yeah, that hasn't changed.
But it was small. I mean, I could do that. I didn't have it catered or anything.
Yeah.
And then we went to Princeton, and there may have been 80 people there because it was relatives from all over and a few of his friends, but no big party, which he didn't miss because I think he was just very pleased with what he had done.
Yeah, I'm sure. And relieved that it was.
Right.
And so his friends, I'm sure he had both Jewish and non-Jewish. It was, did he have
yeah,
a
he
sort
did
of
have
integrated
Jewish and
upbringing?
Friends, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What places or events characterize Princeton for you? Like when you think of Princeton, you think of, is there a special tradition that we have? That you or had?
Well, you know, I lived also in a time when I have a picture of me in a packet, maybe. Nice big picture. And it, the headline, because I've seen this recently, is The World is in the Styx's Living Room. And it was a graduate student wife. Or a young faculty wife entertaining. I mean, it's just so. It's, and then I have another picture of me pouring tea. And I mean, this is just so of that period.
Yeah. What years about you think?
Well, that would have been in the 50s.
50s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. You had been to college. You studied. And you had degrees.
Yeah,
did you ever?
I had studied sociology and psychology and had gone to the extent of applying and being admitted to the New York School of Social Work, which is what I wanted to do. But the New York School of Social Work, which I think is associated with Columbia, I don't know where it is now, but it was on Fifth Avenue. So moving to Princeton and commuting to New York and then going cross town to Fifth Avenue needed a kind of dedication that I have to confess I didn't have. And much later, after I had the children, Rutgers opened a school of social work, and I thought of applying there. But they were making no adjustments for people with children. I mean, you had to work full-time. And by the time they changed, I had decided that I wasn't going to do this now. So I started going into real estate at that time, just to do something.
Did you have friends that were doing that also? You know, what did the women who you associated with do?
Well, most of the women didn't work as they worked. There are a few I know who were lawyers, but that was not common. Now I think there are many more lawyers than even possibly men. I know that I had a neighbor on Deer Path who always wanted to be a doctor, and she had four children, and she was told not even to bother applying. They would never ever accept her. She ended up, I think, going to school and studying biology. But, you know, that was just a... I remember being called once by someone whose wife worked at the bank, and it was a bank that I dealt with, and she was pregnant, and they were going to fire her.
Mm.
And I went to speak to the bank officer about that, and he ended up not firing her, but I pointed out, you know, she was still playing tennis, and his wife also, same. So, but that was the whole society at that time, much more so.
And you probably had entertaining duties as the wife of a distinguished professor.
I think I kept active in you know, on boards of different things over the course of time, which you could do.
Yeah.
I mean, there were plenty of things in Princeton to keep you busy and interested if you weren't working.
Yeah.
And then once I started real estate, that was very time consuming.
And you
although,
did
that. As I was saying before, the prices of what I sold are so ludicrous now. Deer Path, which we bought for $23,000, just sold a house just like it. I mean, nothing new, for $600. So I sold real estate at the wrong time. That's
yeah.
a cinch. But I'd still run into people. And I've become very close friends with some of the people whose houses I...
And... you seem to know everyone, like the last interview and the interviewer, you know them. Where do you know them from? All the, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, Ruth, and you know
I've
Lou
been around
and everything.
A long time.
Where do you meet them?
Well, actually, they're both members of the Jewish Center.
Right.
Ruth used to be, she was at one point a dean at Rutgers. But I think I knew them mainly from the Jewish Center. I guess Len, I think I met in a different capacity. But you know, if you've been in town for a while, and if you've been active in any organizations, that makes a difference.
Is there anything about Princeton that's ever frustrated or disappointed you, that you wished was different?
Actually, not really. I think Princeton has really lived up to it. It's a very pretty town to live in. There are lots of parks and lots of activities. When I hear about people moving to Florida, I just can't even imagine it. It may be warmer, but I don't mind the cold weather. And there's just so much going on in Princeton, even during the pandemic. I took courses through the Princeton Senior Resource Center. The Jewish Center was very caring because I'm among the older citizens here. They always called to find out if I needed anything or wanted anything, and I thought that was really very kind and very, very nice. You always felt that they were there for you if you needed them. And even though I haven't been as active in the Jewish Center as I was in the early days. What else can I tell you?
We like to ask people who've been around for a while the biggest event you can remember happening in Princeton, something that turned the whole town upside down.
Oh, reunions.
Everyone likes reunions. We've heard that.
And I just think that it's just really wonderful. I mean, it's the most wonderful way that they use to keep alumni in the fold.
True.
I think my son went to Harvard, and he never applied to Princeton. He grew up in Princeton. Wasn't actually crazy about Harvard, to tell you the truth. But anyway, they do practically nothing of their reunions. But they seem to get money anyway.
Right.
That's just the name does it. But I love reunions, and they're just fun. And what else is there that is special? I think also, you know, they have this reenactment which is always also interesting. I remember one Professor Spitzer, I think it was, who said to us, the wonderful thing about the reenactment is that after the battle, you go home and have a cup of hot soup.
Right. This is the Princeton battlefield.
Right. You don't have to.
Gotcha.
You're not lying on the ground.
No.
I think the best thing about Princeton is, in addition to being a very beautiful town, is that it's just full of activity. I mean, I think of the number of organizations that I've gone to where there are lectures. And there's an unlimited number of people who are willing to do that. I mean, you would think that the old guard and any of these others, that that you would run out of people, or to give the courses at the Princeton Senior Resource Center. I mean, there are just wonderful people around all over. So, and also it's a liberal community. So all of the above make it a good place to live.
I think, do you have any other other
big changes in town? Well, I think the Jewish community has just grown and grown so that you don't know all the people that you don't. I have an Israeli neighbor across the street who made no effort to be friendly or be friendly with an Israeli who lives down the street. As I say, in the beginning, you knew everyone. And you just don't know. And that's a little too bad, but that's what happens when communities grow. I can't think of anything else that's really relevant to what it was like in the early years.
Well, then I have to ask my food question because I like food. What restaurant was in business back in the day that is not that you really miss and wish they were here, still here?
I don't know that we were big restaurant goers, but Lyra's has been here for a long time, and that's not here anymore. Yeah, that was nice.
Just the sign.
Oh, also, there were very few restaurants in Princeton. If a new restaurant came to town, you'd say, oh, where is it? They'd say, it's where X used to be. Mm-hmm. It would just be replacing the one that was there. Now you go through and there are
a million.
A huge number of restaurants. Yeah. But, so that's but McCarter has been a very good to have around too. That's another one that's yeah, nice because that's been there for a while. You could go to things there all the time.
Was that there even when Princeton Inn was down the block from it? It was already in existence at that location.
I think McCarter was there. And then and the other difference is that when Tom was a graduate student or when he was an early faculty, you could just call the university and call the person who was teaching some course you wanted to sit in on, and you'd say, can I sit in on your course? And they always said yes. It was just very informal. I mean, that's changed a lot now. Well, first of all, I guess there are many more people who want to sit in on courses. Also, there are these older developments, you know, like these senior developments, and they send buses in, mm-hmm, if people to watch. So there are hundreds of people who are auditing classes, and that becomes much more difficult. So the whole thing is much more difficult and much more formal. It was, you know, the old days, you just called and went.
Did you ever sit in on class because you wanted to?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which classes do you like to in on?
Now I take courses at the Senior Resource Center, mm-hmm, and they have a wonderful variety of courses. I take, history, and I take a course on the Supreme Court and things like that. Before that, I know I took a course on logic once at the university, I mean, in the early days, until it got into the mathematical part.
Oh.
I decided that wasn't the course I really wanted. But there were others. And then there were always lectures at the university that you could go to, which I used to go to all the time. At 4 o'clock at the Woodrow Wilson School.
Yeah.
Or other lectures.
How about the ones at the Princeton Plasma Physics Lab?
And then that's where my husband worked at the Plasma Physics Lab.
And did you go? I know they have programs for the general public too.
They do.
Was he involved in those?
He actually started the plasma physics program in the astronomy department. It then changed from astronomy to astrophysical sciences. And he brought in the plasma physics into that. He wrote a book on waves and plasma, which he did the writing in 1960 when we were in Israel. And we used to think about funny names that the book could have, having written it in Israel. And of course, it couldn't be named that. But in his introduction to the book, he said something in the beginning about, I don't know, Boltzmann theory or some such thing, and then at the end, he gave acknowledgments and thanks to Hyman Spitzer and to this one and to that one and to his wife for rejecting the following titles. And that's the way we got in Trapped, the Story of an Electron, the autobiography of Hazel Sherwin Sticks and her fight against plasma waves.
Oh.
It shows how much of a help I was. And that went out, you know.
Oh, I feel like I'd like to see that in the end page there.
His book was translated into many different languages, but I assume that they did not include that. It wouldn't have much meaning in Japanese.
Well, that seems wrong. They should have.
His book, I'll just throw this in, was that then he revised it much later in 1995. Before he went into the teaching part more, I want you to know that it is still being sold. I actually get, money for it. I mean, it's still being sold all over the world. So some things.
It was a seminal work. I mean,
really
it was a big deal.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So I guess I shouldn't have fought against it anyway. But let's see, what else can I tell you about? I mean, life is very, very different here now than it was in the early days, but that's also societal as well. But I do think Princeton is a great place to live. I would not ever. It's also well located. I mean, you can go to New York, you can go to Philadelphia, whichever you're, we're New York oriented, so you go to New York. But you can get the bus, go in, and you're in New York in an hour and a half or 2 hours. I can't think of a nicer place to live, I have to say.
Well, I think we should leave it there.
A good way to end it?
Yeah. And okay. Thank you. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.